This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you until 12 o'clock. Quick mention about Westminster Christian Academy. 997-2900 is the phone number. WCASTL.org is the website. You can set up a shadowing procedure for your son and daughter so they can visit that spectacular facility out at Town and Country. Three gyms, two baseball fields, an incredible football field. The tennis courts are used for the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament. It's unbelievable. Westminster Christian Academy. All right, we are joined now by a guy who is going to be enshrined into the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame Friday night, Frontenac Hilton, a part of a very distinguished class, too, with Mike Martz and with Roy Jetstream Green, Chris Carpenter. Charlie Scheer's going in. It's going to be a great night. He is Bill McDermott, Mr. Soccer. Bill, welcome to the program. How are you, sir?
Frank, how are you? Very nice new digs here, by the way.
Thank you. Very nice. A little easier to get you here than O'Fallon, huh?
I come from McKnight and Highway 40, so it's very easy.
Yeah,
very,
great location.
It's the lone chance I get to look at number one fairway at Old Warson.
Very nice. Oh, yeah. Very good. So who's going to be at your table there on Friday night?
My wife, Connie, our oldest daughter, Elizabeth, and her husband, Tom, and our youngest daughter, Colleen, who just got married August 19th, and her husband, Guy Sanfilippo. So we'll have a nice family contingent. But it dramatically goes against the spending freeze, which is now taking place at the McDermott household because of and after the August 19th wedding.
The wedding of 307.
307.
And you refused to look at the final number.
I did not want to see the final number. Another brother-in-law in my wife's family, son-in-law, excuse me, he did not want to see the final number either of his daughter's wedding. So we'll just take that to Kudus with us.
Did you ever think about making the offer? Because so many fathers do. Okay, I'm going to give you this money, and you can go to Las Vegas and get married, and we'll come to the wedding, and then you can have this to lay down on a house. Did you think about that?
You've not heard
of that, right?
Oh, positively. I did not, because even had we made that offer to Colleen, I do not think she would have taken us up on it, even if it would have been very attractive, because she was dead set.
Yeah.
We were going to honor her and her twin. She's a twinless twin, as you know. We've recounted that story endlessly. But she wanted to have a wedding reception, and we were going to have a wedding reception.
And how did she honor her twin?
Did various things. Had a piece of one of Mary's favorite old dresses sewn into the bottom part of her wedding dress.
Oh, cool.
Very nice. As I mentioned, her husband's name is Guy Sanfilippo, and they met, Mary and Colleen met Guy together at Rockhurst. So consequently, for that twin bond, which is the most compelling relationship ever between two people, this twin bond. I think that made it much more comfortable for Colleen.
Were they identical twins?
Or? They were fraternal twins. Had they been identical, our doctors at Cardinal Glennon all told us they would have had the same set of medical problems. But Mary was the one who, from birth, had fared the worst.
Huh. What about how emotional it was walking her down the aisle?
Very. Very difficult, because even though Mary was there, I understand that she was there, but the fact that she wasn't going to have a chance.
Yeah. Well, I'm
sorry. I never know. I never know when it's going to hit me. But her not being there and not having a chance to see her twin get married, that's a little rough.
Yeah. I'm wondering, Bill, if you were to, if let's just say the parents were paying like they do for the wedding, and it wasn't the daughter, it was the son. I bet the boys, if they had that decision, would definitely take the cash and go to Vegas.
Your prior offer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Take the cash, go to Vegas, take the cash, go to the Hotel du Cop for a weekend, go down to the Breakers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, my brother, who makes part of his income on weddings is a big fan of having the daughter having a big wedding.
Well, but of course.
Yes.
But of course.
And you had it at Norwood, which had must have Norwood. Been so beautiful.
It was absolutely magnificent. They did a tremendous job. The entire staff, Ken Butler and his entire staff at Norwood, did a magnificent job to make it an everlasting memory for Guy and Colleen. Yes.
All right, so many of us, when we think of Bill McDermott, we think of the national soccer commentator, we think of the commentator on KMOX and often on KFNS, but you were a great player at McBride High School and a part of two national championships at SLU, two of the 10 that SLU won, and one of them is really bizarre, the one at Michigan State where the weather was almost like, you know, the Green Bay-Dallas game in 67.
It was worse than that, Frank. As a matter of fact, much worse. The game was December 2nd, 1967. It was played here in St. Louis at Washington University's Francis Field. Now, literally, I am not exaggerating here. It was coming down sideways. Rain, sleet, snow. There was existing water, puddles on the field, ice flows. Pieces of ice were floating literally in the water. The game should have never, never been started.
And how much of it was played?
At about the 42nd, 43rd minute, Guy Bush from St. Louis, one of the many St. Louisans on the Michigan State team at the time, because Michigan State was, the, for all intents and purposes, the very first college to come into St. Louis and recruit St. Louis players. Guy Bush, who had gone to McBride, he slips, falls, loses his balance, hits his forehead on one of the posts. He's knocked unconscious. The referee says, that's it. We're calling it off. So we were declared co-champions, and that set a precedent because the following year in 68, Michigan State was declared co-champs again with University of Maryland because of inclement weather, length of game, things of that nature. Yeah.
So from when did they get smart and say, we're going to play these national championships in warmer climates avoid this?
They have done that, but not sufficiently enough for my liking and a lot of college coaches. They have this incessant need to play in soccer-specific stadiums. I understand that. But consequently, sometimes they will play in soccer-specific stadiums that are on the East Coast. And in the dead of winter, which is the second week of December when the NCAA College Cup is held, it's not always the most idyllic of weather. When St. Louis University played in four straight NCAA finals in the early 70s, 71, 72, 73, 74, 3 years it was played in conjunction with the Orange Bowl, and the game was played in Miami at the Orange Bowl.
Wow.
When St. Louis University defeated Howard, and one of the years, the 71, the final, the title was vacated because Howard used ineligible players.
So what was the wind chill or the temperature again that day?
Oh, it had to be in the 20s. That I don't recall with as much certainty as the conditions, the physical conditions, but it was certainly in the 20s. It wasn't a balmy 50 or 60.
And you couldn't do it like on a really cold day for our Lady of the Pillar soccer teams where we'd wear sweatpants under the shorts? You wore just shorts?
I wore shorts. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, it was broke. The game should have never, ever been started. So Harry Keel comes out. I remember this distinctly because he's right behind me and he's talking to the referee. He's screaming at, yelling at the referee, questioning his ancestral background. Said, you never should have started the GD game. Pardon me? And the rest, it's all right. Good job. Good decision to call off the game.
What was the score of the game?
It was 0-0 at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh, boy, that's wild. And then, Bill, after you were done with your career at St. Louis University, did you pursue a professional career or did you go straight into business?
The knee operations ended any hopes of that, so I started my own business in July 1 of 1976. But prior to that, when I first got out of college in 1970 at St. Louis U, spring of 1970, I said, okay, I've gone to college for 4 years. Where's my job? And I had gone to an on-campus interview in the fall and spring with Hallmark Cards, so I thought that was going to work out. It didn't. So I had an offer to sell cookies for Keebler in Wichita. That was not going to happen. So I went to art school in Chicago for 2 years, got my master's in communication design, which is fancy terminology for graphic design, came back, was the assistant athletic director for St. Louis University for Larry Albus at the time.
Really?
And I did that for 1-2 years. And I worked for Jack Galmich at the St. Louis Stars. I was his director of sales. And all the time while I was doing these particular jobs, I was also working on a freelance basis with my graphic design business. And then one day when I was working at St. Louis University, Larry Albus got a call from Ted Koppler. Ted Koppler, the general manager, president, owner of KPLR-TV, they were having an NASL game in Texas, in Irving, Texas, at Texas Stadium between the St. Louis Stars and the Dallas Tornado, featuring at that time Kyle Rote Jr. So he calls St. Louis University, the athletic department, Ted Koppler does, because he thinks that because of the soccer existing pedigree at St. Louis U, certainly you have someone down there who can announce a soccer game for us, because we already have our play-by-play guy, the Jack Buck of Dallas, Frank Gleiber.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to do the play-by-play. So Larry confronts me with this overall scenario. Would you like to entertain this? I said, well, I've done PA and a little, very tiny bit of radio. I'll give it a go. So I get to Texas. It's July of 1972. I meet Frank Gleiber. He tells me his first sentence, I know nothing about soccer. I said, well, this should be wonderful because I know nothing about television. So it worked out nicely.
And how many years on the network level and how many different networks did you broadcast soccer games for?
Well, I started off with the Major League Soccer in 1996. Myself, Ty Keogh, and Phil Shane, we did the league package for ESPN, for ABC, ESPN, and ESPN2. I did that from 96 to the year 2000. And then I worked on for ABC and ESPN, ESPN2 at the 94 and 98 World Cups. And then a really fun assignment was 2006. I lived in Washington, D.C. for about 5 weeks. XM put me up in a condo in Pentagon City, and we had hour-to-hour, day-by-day coverage of the World Cup in Germany in 2006, and I was the morning drive host.
Really?
At XM Studios, which I mentioned here that your new studios are nice. They were grandiose. They were fabulous. And each channel, each person on each channel had their own studio. The Sinatra channel, the Beatles channel, the 60s channel. It was astounding. And they put me up in Pentagon City. And you can appreciate this being in local radio and television, Frank. Before I got home from my assignment, which, as I mentioned, was 5 weeks old, my wife calls and says, you got an envelope here from XM. Oh, what could it possibly be? It was a check. After my first week, they had sent me money already, which in the radio business is unheard of.
And you've always had a great close relationship with Bob Costas.
Yes.
When he first came to town, you became immediate friends. And then Bob was the one who let, I guess, NBC know about your broadcasting prowess. And that helped too, right?
I can give you a story about an audition for NBC. How much time do we have?
We got 3 or 4 more minutes.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's for the Australia Olympics in the year 2000, I believe.
Yeah.
All right. So as I find out that NBC is going to be doing the Olympics in 2000, and they're going to feature soccer, which Dick Ebersol detests, and Bob made me abundantly aware of that. But I said, can you at least get my name on the radar screen here so that if there's a possibility of doing it, I'd like to have my name considered. Long story short, Bob does that. I send all the appropriate tapes, resumes, everything. Starting off with the year, almost right after the France World Cup in 1998. So I'm sending all this information to NBC. Bob's getting it. He's giving it to Ebersol. He's giving it to the coordinating producer for soccer. And I hear nothing. I talk to Bob. Bob says, they're going to get back to you. They like your tapes. They like your work. They'll get back to you very shortly. Well, now it's Good Friday in the spring of 2000, and I still haven't heard anything. I finally get a call from NBC that week. Can you come up to NBC for an audition? Well, certainly. I'd be glad to. When? Tomorrow. What? Tomorrow?
On the Saturday before Easter.
Yes, uh-huh. Andres Cantor is doing play-by-play. So we have to go to NBC to do the audition. Now, NBC has no video that I know of soccer because they've never done a World Cup. Consequently, I fax a request to the United States Soccer Federation for the Olympic final from Athens, Georgia, which was featured in the Olympics, the prior Olympics, of Nigeria and Argentina. I get the game report thinking that and hoping that, more importantly, hoping that this is going to be the tape that we're going to be commenting on because they don't have any other history of soccer. Long story, very short. We get to the venue. I'm going to audition with Andres Cantor. Up on the screen comes the Argentina-Nigeria game. I know every touch of the game. First of all, I watched it, and I was there speaking on behalf of AT&T anyway about soccer in general, how it's growing. So I'm so high for this. I'm ready to go. I was out. I got there a little early. I got put in Bucky Gunt's office, the famous director for NBC, to wait until Andres was ready. Long story short, again, I do the routine. I do the audition. We cover the part of the game. I do a stand up with Andres. He asked me two or three questions. Thank you very much. We'll get back to you. I don't want to know who the other finalists are. I'm there to do my own thing. All right, now we'll get back to you within 1 or 2 days. A week goes by. 10 days go by. Bob, what the heck's the deal with this? We got to get on with this. If nothing else, we got to know who's going to be because it's going to start soon. He goes, I'll get back to you. I'll talk to Ebersol directly and find out because I know they've looked everything over. Sure enough, within 2 or 3 hours, Bob calls him back and says, well, I've got good news and bad news. not a good first sentence. Ebersol, who hates soccer, said, Bob, you're right. Your buddy was the best. His audition was the best. He worked well with Andres. He was good on camera. But we're going to use Alexi Lalas because he has more visibility, which at the time Alexi did, of course, after the 94 World Cup in particular. That's my brief little NBC audition story. But ever since then, I've never had an agent. I've always just said, I'll have Bob Costas call. And people say,
that's even better.
You're calling on behalf of, oh, I see.
Very nice. So Friday night, how long will the speech be?
It's they no longer have speeches. You are interviewed by a sports commentator.
Oh, okay,
and I think Tom Ackerman's going to do me. But because of, you know how these things sometimes drone on and on. And you and I have done these banquets countless.
Yes.
It always gives you a chance to use Jack Buck's famous line, thank you, Frank. I could listen to you all night, and I think I just did.
That's well played. That's good stuff. And if you'd like to be a part of this great night, you can call Tim Moore, 618-558-4861. 618-558-4861. There are some tickets left. Frontenac Hilton, An Evening with the Stars, the St. Louis Sports Hall of Fame. Bill, great stuff. Honored to have you on the program. Congratulations on a really well-deserved honor. We were so happy that you're going in. Thank you,
sir. Thank you very much. Thanks for the time, Frank.
All right, that's Bill McDermott. Before we go to break, I do want to tell you about the Bomberito Automotive family. If you're looking for a car, Bomberito.com is the place. 20 new car locations, 10 pre-owned car locations. They sell more cars than any automobile dealership in the state of Missouri, and they've done it for 8 straight years. The Bomberito Automotive family, nobody does it better. We'll take a break. We're coming right back after this.